You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Soul Queens and Blues Kings, making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Norman Boogie Cat Sylvester and Band bring together regional rhythm and blues acts for a night of music and dance as a benefit for healthcare for all Oregon. Again, that's Soul Queens and Blues Kings making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talking Earth, and I am Patrick Bocard, sometime host and board op of Talking Earth. And I am fortunate enough to be in an undisclosed location in Southeast with two of my guests tonight. Julia Gaskill's poetry has been published through Vagabond City Lit, Nailed Magazine, Knights Library Magazine, and more. She was included in the anthologies In Absentia, which I may be mispronouncing, I'm not sure, and Excelsior. And she is the author of four chapbooks, the co-creator of the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam Festival, which we will talk about a little bit later, and runs the monthly show Slamlandia. Her debut full-length collection, Weirdo, came out through Game Over Books in October 2022. Find Julia at Geek Girl Grown Up or juliagaskill.com. How much of that was lies, Julia?
It was all pretty factual, although I did just realize that the show I run, Slamlandia, is actually, as of this month now, twice a month, and so...
Bi-monthly.
It is now bi-monthly. I forgot to update it. It's going to be every first and third Thursday, except this month it's going to be, instead of third, it's going to be second, just because Ada Limon is going to be at Literary Arts on the third Thursday, and that's much more important, I would say.
Yeah,
definitely check that out, as well as Slamlandia.
My other guest tonight is Stephen Meads. Stephen Meads, originally based in the Bay Area, now lives and performs in Portland and has been performing spoken word for over 20 years. He has featured at slams all across the country, from Portland, Maine to Honolulu, Hawaii. Stephen performed in the Individual World Poetry Slam in 2013, 2014, and 2017, and has competed in the National Poetry Slam five times with various teams. He has been featured on Drunk in a Midnight Choir, Slam Find, Right About Now, and Button Poetry. So how much did I lie about that?
I think that's all accurate.
Yeah.
I've been in Portland for about the same amount of time that I was a poet in the Bay Area. So I've been here like over a decade, and I've been doing poetry for two decades. So half of my poetry time
is perfectly balanced, like that.
It's balanced out. I hope it's not like that.
Not like that. Okay, no, not like Thanos. Yes, it's definitely not like Thanos. I may have to cut that out.
Believe it.
And one of the main reasons we're here, that I'm here to record the show, is the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam, which is occurring in June 2nd and 3rd.
Mm-hmm. We're bringing it back.
And where is it happening? Because I had problems finding it finding out.
That's fair. We're only just kind of now getting more information out about it. That's one of the reasons we're on this show. Yeah, so this is going to be the second time we've ever done the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam. We did it once before in 2019. It's going to be in the same area. It was all in downtown Portland with kind of like Literary Arts and Powell's and the Ace Hotel kind of being like the central hub, and we're going to be revisiting those places again this year for the festival. You know, we had had grand plans of doing a second one in 2020, and then, you know, the world kind of fell apart, I guess you could say, and we had to put it on pause for several years until we felt like it was safe and like something we were, you know, I don't know, feeling safe for introducing it back into the community. Risks were lower than they were the last couple of years, and so it felt like a good time to bring it back for the second time. So yeah, it's going to be a festival that's happening in downtown Portland on June 2nd and 3rd. A large portion of it is going to be a poetry slam. Basically, the evening portions on both evenings. The first night, we are having 16 teams compete. They're coming from pretty far.
Scattershot. We've got a couple teams coming from Utah.
Missouri.
We've got a team coming from Kansas City, Missouri. Teams from Flagstaff and Phoenix, Arizona.
And Albuquerque,
New Mexico.
Area, yeah. Yeah, some Pacific Northwest teams as well.
Central California, I think, is sending a team.
Berkeley.
So it's like the entire West.
The entire West. The grander Mountain West is coming to the Pacific Northwest for 2 days of poetry competitions, most of which are free to the public. The first night will all be free. The second night, the finals night, you'll have to buy a ticket. But presumably you'll want to.
Because
it's going to be so cool.
A lot of good poetry.
Yeah.
You know, the reason we conceived Bigfoot back in, I think we like really started talking about it in the summer of 2018 was because, you know, there was a large national circuit for competitive slam poetry, Poetry Slam Incorporated, PSI.
That was the governing body. And they ran the National Poetry Slam, which was in my bio. So when it talked about me competing on teams, like Julia's also competed on some teams, but... You know, that Patrick, I think you competed on a Portland team.
Oh, no, I was. Let's not lie about this.
I'm gonna
give a slight. I was a timekeeper at the '96 Nationals.
There you go.
Oh, that's yeah. Awesome.
I have never been on a Portland Slam team. Okay. And in fact, for a while there, I think I had the lowest score
in the history of Portland Slam.
Yeah, because the first. I had a poem that was anti Tom Waits that I read at the first real Poetry Slam. Portland, and I got the woman sitting with me that I know, but we just happened to sit at the same table, and she was a judge, gave me a negative score, so I ended up with like a -6 or -8 or something. I might have been defeated on or beaten or how do you describe that? I'm not sure. Someone probably had a worse score at a bad poetry slam that was done a little later, like a year later, but I was going to go and defend my title, but I decided to go on a date instead.
Fair.
Yeah, which was probably smart. I don't know. But yeah, no, I definitely have never... I've gotten to the final stage a couple times.
Fair enough.
I have never won.
Gotcha.
I've never
won at a nationals or anything.
Well,
but,
that's at nationals. I've never won a slam ever.
Fair.
That's much different.
You got to make your triumphant.
I also have to say that I did compete in the Nurekin Slam once.
Nice.
Oh wow.
Yes. Nice.
Well, it's you just go there in the middle of the week. No,
sure.
Then that's how you get to the point where you maybe eventually get on the team because you have to win a whole bunch, but.
Their system was weird. You have to win like a Wednesday night show to be in the Friday night showcase.
Yeah.
And then you have to win a Friday night showcase to be in one of the runoffs that'll determine, and they do like 5 runoffs to put their team.
They don't always do the 3-minute time thing.
They do not. Yeah, they're.
But the thing I have to say is that I actually got better scores in Eureka than I did. Which I thought was amusing.
Love it.
But yes, that's your to get back to the Bigfoot Poetry Slam.
So in 2018, the governing body of the National Poetry Slam, PSI, collapsed. It basically kind of blew up in flames of financial who knows what and not enough dedicated employees and not enough care, time, and effort, and it went goodbye.
So many of their employees were just poets volunteering. Ultimately, it got so big with, like, so many different scenes and communities wanting to participate, and then just expanding it that it just got unruly, and they didn't have enough people with, like, business finance savvy on the board to, like, really, you know, kind of know what they were doing. And so it did, unfortunately, implode. And so that took a lot of national events off of the table. And there are a ton of regional events that happen all over, well, I'm sure probably all over the world, but definitely, like, all over the country. There's Rust Belt, there's Southern Fried, there's Southwest Shootout.
But all of those are far from
They're us. All very far. There is no regional that we're aware of, like, happening up here.
So basically what you're telling me, there hasn't been a national poetry slam competition for, like, 5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. 2018 was the last one.
Certainly not one that was organized through the original existing bodies. There have been, there have been some, like, attempts at rebooting, but none have had the same scope.
Yeah.
And, you know, and not that Bigfoot has the same scope, but essentially we wanted to create a regional for the Northwest. You know, they had, back in the day, I think Seattle had done a regional called, like, the Salmon Slam.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wanted to basically encourage the poets in our area who, you know, Seattle and Portland and even Vancouver, BC, like, we're close to those folks. We're not necessarily as close to, like, you know, Georgia or Boston.
Asheville.
So getting out to the other side of the country seemed really daunting, but bringing some of the folks around to us seemed very feasible. So, like, five of us got together in a living room and we're like, let's try and put a regional event together. And that was the inception for the first Bigfoot that we did.
And, you know, like Steven just said, we really thought it was going to be like, okay, we'll get, like, a team from Eugene, we'll get a couple Portland teams, maybe some Seattle folks. And even at that one, we still got some folks coming from further than we expected. We had, like, a San Diego team, we had two Phoenix teams, one Phoenix team.
Yeah, we had a team from Omaha, Nebraska.
Victoria, Canada. Yeah. So that was, like, a great showing. And for the most part, everything we heard feedback-wise for a first-time festival was really positive.
We felt like we could do it again.
Yeah, essentially. And
then things happened.
And also, like, you know, burnout from the pandemic. Like, you know, there was, like, questions if it was going to happen 2022. And I really wasn't feeling ready for it, both, like, globally, like, global pandemic-wise, but also just, like, not feeling energy-wise. Like, trying to remember how to be a human again first before putting on a big poetry festival. But
it's really interesting, though, because it seems like, where I live in Old Town, it is not really coming back, but that's just because of other issues.
Yeah.
I mean, the downtown area you're talking about has actually come back. But, like, on the bus out here, like, in this undisclosed location, there are places that are hopping on the main street.
People
are ready to go do stuff.
Yeah, and I've talked with a couple people recently about how it feels like people are kind of, like, hungry for poetry or art right now, which is really nice. The show I run, Slamlandia, went back in person last April in 2022. We, you know, did a soft launch, but we've had a pretty great turnout at that show almost every single show that we've done since we've come back in person, so much so that we started this second monthly show. So we're now at, like, Literary Arts once a month, and we're now also in the Cafe in Powell's once a month as well. And we've put on some just, like, random pop-up shows for folks coming through town wanting to do an event that wasn't tied necessarily with one of the slams. We've done some fundraisers for the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam, and people are coming out, and people seem really excited right now for just, like, everything going on. And so it does seem like a good time to bring a poetry festival back to Portland and also put, you know, our city, you know, on display and invite folks to come out and, you know, spend a weekend in Portland and, you know, eat some good food and take in some poetry and see the city and everything.
Yeah.
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 There are some fundraisers coming up, though, right?
Yeah, let's talk about the upcoming fundraisers. We have Slam Olympics, which is happening at the end of this month.
It's happening on Saturday, April 21st. No, sorry, Friday, April 21st. The date is definitely April 21st.
So yeah, 4 days from now.
Oh, yeah, right, because this is going to be the future.
Time travel.
I'm going to double check. Yes, Friday, April 21st. So that one... it's just going to be a fun, dumb time. Basically, we reached out to 12 slam poets who've been, you know, performing for a long time here in Portland. We've got 12 of them. They're split up onto three different teams of four. And they're going to be doing a lot of just, like, silly games for the benefit of an audience watching. We've got some challenges for them, like the Pepper Poetry Slam Challenge, where essentially they've got to eat some very hot sauce or like a whole pepper and then try to keep their composure going through an entire poem. There's Hatletics, where they're going to draw an action out of a hat, and then they're going to be judged on how well they can commit to that action throughout their entire poem, whether that is a non-offensive accent or doing a certain like dance move or something to that effect, how well they can keep it up. And not like lose it or not commit to it.
The pepper thing, I mean, you can't actually drink water.
There will be no water no milk on
you
hand.
You can drink water. That's not going to help you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there will 100% be water and milk on hand. There will be,
afterwards.
But after. They've got to
make it through.
Or they can tap out to go get some milk. things of that nature. It's just, you know, just a fun time to be had where folks are going to come out and get to watch poets be silly and make a little bit of a fool of themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you watched the Netflix, Korean Netflix show, Physical 100.
I thought you were going to say Squid Game for some reason at first.
Or Squid Game, for that matter, but the Physical 100 is less fatal.
It's not like Squid Game.
It's kind of like the one where they have you do a bunch of physical challenges, but this is like with the literary and creative arts bent in mind. So we're going to be testing our poets' like optimal abilities to perform and create poetry under extreme circumstances.
Yeah, but it's not like Battle Royale.
But it's right. No one gets murdered. There's no death. There's no like weird big doll with a machine gun eye that'll shoot you if you stop moving like a fraction of a second too late or whatever. You know, spoilers for the first episode of Squid Game. It's very much not that. It was conceived so, like, when we were going to do it in 2020, it was going to be an Olympic year. And so we conceived of doing an Olympic-related tie-in to kick it off. But since we were delayed by COVID, even though the Olympics got delayed, and there have since been two Olympics since we've been able to do this event, this will be our first version of the Slam Olympics.
I forgot that was like part of the conceit of like
that was the reason we
at least
chose
the name. Wow. Okay.
But yeah, so it's gonna be, you'll see poets competing in events. They'll be winning medals. It'll be a lot of fun. It's gonna be real wacky. It's at ADX in Southeast Portland, which is a beautiful creative space. Mm-hmm. It's like an incredible like maker spot, and it's just opened a like really cool international food cart area that's like caters to BIPOC and queer owned food businesses. So that's gonna be right next to it. So like you can come get some amazing food right before the show starts.
Mm-hmm.
And
get
then
something
come over
that will make you not as thirsty after you have your
sure. Pepper. Yeah, ground your stomach.
Yeah.
But
okay, what's the address of it?
I don't have the exact address on hand. It's I can tell you it's around 11th and Stark.
Right.
11th and Stark.
It's okay. It's yeah, it's on 11th just north of Stark, so
and not downtown, south.
No.
Not southeast okay. Portland.
And then it's I think doors are at 7 and show starts at 7:30.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure people knew.
Yeah.
Remember
absolutely.
It's this Friday. You all should be there. And yes, you get to make fun of me if I don't go. I'm not sure my work's good.
Yeah, and all of this information's online. We have a Facebook event page. We also have an Eventbrite page. This is a fundraiser for the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam, so any money that comes in goes directly towards, like, venues and prize money and marketing and all of the fun stuff that it takes to put a festival on. So on Eventbrite, you can buy a ticket in advance for $10, and then we're charging $15 at the door. Yeah, so you should come on out and have a good time. And then we have one other fundraiser that's going to be coming up a little further out in May. It's going to be on Saturday, May 20th. It's going to be at Honey Latte, and that one is going to just be a showcased reading along with a raffle. We're going to showcase some of the poets that are going to be competing in the competition at the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam. So both teams from Portland Poetry Slam and Slamlandia will be showing off some of their poems. You know, it's a little up in the air if the Verslandia kids are going to be competing, but right now it's looking like that might be, they might be having a team in Bigfoot, and so those kids might come out and share some poems. And yeah, we've got at least one pickup team with a couple members around that might come out and do some poems as well. So
yeah, sort of local showcase for the competing poets in Bigfoot. And then, yeah, we'll also have a bunch of, like, interesting and, like, cool raffle gift baskets put together that we'll be using as more fundraisers. We had some very, like, wonderful businesses have been partnering with us and offering in-kind donations and service, as well as, like, some independent and local creators and makers around.
Yeah,
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, things, so. Shout out to Guardian Games and Cosmic Monkey, which recently donated some stuff for our raffle, so, you know, gonna shut them out online, too, but... Yeah.
And that's May...
That's going to be on May 20th, which is a Saturday. And I think that that one, the start time is 7 p.m. And it's at Honey Latte. Also don't have the address in front of me, but
you
it is...
You can look it up.
It's,
Honey Latte.
It's in Southeast Portland. It's around...
Right around 11th and May.
It's going to be in a month, so you have no excuses.
Yes, yeah. That one, maybe there will be more info up on it on Facebook at this point. We'll see. Who knows where we'll be in 3 weeks from now.
Future.
Yeah, the future. So those are our two fundraisers.
We're not sure what the future holds.
Yeah.
Does the future hold a poem or two? I think maybe we should.
Sure, we want to transition to poetry.
Sure, we can transition.
Let's segue poorly.
This is part of the reason that we are here as well, is to share some poems. I have some weird things. So I was talking about Netflix earlier. So I figured I'd kick it off with a Netflix-related poem that I have. So my partner and I have been watching the latest season of Love is Blind, which is really, really bad, and wild. And very early on in the dating portion of that show, we were introduced to a character who didn't leave the pods with anybody, as far as I know, but he was, this guy named Billy. And I decided to write sort of an imagined character piece from his perspective, based on one of the quotes he said about how he likes wearing leopard print. Being here has been really wild because, I mean, I don't typically get vulnerable. Normally, I'm the guy wearing a leopard print shirt that says stuff like, I like leopard print. And I mean, that's true. But the thing is, my family is all leopards. Yeah, I'm kind of like a modern day Tarzan situation. Basically, family died, raised entirely by leopards. I mean, this was also in Cincinnati at the zoo. What I've been told about the incident is my family, my human family, got kind of overzealous and must have fell in the leopard exhibit with me when I was a baby. But nobody really noticed I was in there for years. And so I just grew up kind of thinking I was this weird leopard, like I was just missing my spots or whatever. I couldn't roar very well. You know, I'm not as fuzzy as my mom and pops. So yeah, I pretty much just ate with all the other leopards every meal. I mean, I guess that's also a deal breaker for me. If we start dating, you have to like raw meat, because I choke like, oh yeah, I like it raw. But really, like, I had most of my meals from basically age 3 to age 16 just hunks of raw beef thigh and stuff like that. It was wild. So yeah, I never really talk about it because, oh, that's just Billy trying to hog the spotlight, wearing his leopard print out at the club, showing off his incredible vertical leap.
just about 4 feet clean up into the air, and I can do it with raw steak in my mouth. But, like, people think it's a joke or it's a deflection. It's hard to talk about this because it's life stuff for me. Like, I'm like Superman wearing my family crest and everything. I just appreciate this experiment for giving me a chance to just find somebody as me, as Billy, and not as the guy who will, like, swipe at your face at the club with his paw because I'm trying to show you that I'm down to mate with you right here, right now. But I am down.
I haven't seen that show at all. That was hilarious.
It's a very small fraction of that show. I think we saw this man 3 times, and he was garbage.
A maximum of 30 seconds of clips.
And it, so is this show like, is it like...
oh, it's a reality dating show. It's...
Yeah. I was thinking of the Venture Brothers and one of the major characters who was raised by butterflies.
Right? Yeah.
And he got really... The difference is
the
that,
monarch?
Yeah, but he got really depressed because the butterflies all died after...
It's a very different show.
It's a very different show.
It's a, that's a great show, but it's mad as it messed up. But it's also but yeah, that was hilarious.
Thank you. Am I still going or
we didn't establish anything.
It's just chaos right
should
now.
Should we switch off? We can switch off.
I'm not gonna follow Stephen's lead and do a poem about Billy. I'll do a more pop culture, kind of like in the conversation right now a little bit because of the Mario movie that just came out. Not quite as funny as Steven's, unsurprisingly. This poem is called In Which I Am Secretly the Protagonist of the Video Game Franchise Luigi's Mansion. And Luigi has this ghost problem where after the world deems him triumphant, he convinces himself it is all game over. The demons are laid to new rest. He can resume life as the secondhand sibling. But those ghosts, they always find their way back into his story, slink out of the preface, make themselves more than a prequel, laugh in the face of Luigi's so-called triumph. Luigi screams every time before picking the weapon back up, steadying the quiver in his hands, finding reason in doing it all over instead of just running the other way. And have I always been the Luigi of my life, the secondhand sibling in every childhood memory? Look at how I always fantasize of the fleeing, but never quite make it to the door. Watch as I scream every time, only to then pick up the phone or answer the email or have the conversation. And neither of us ever asked for this, you know, this unending anxiety of, well, someone's got to do it, so it's got to be us, right? Right? Now all I want is a calm story, an unexciting denouement. But my ghosts, those howling monsters of yesteryear, they always have another ending in mind. Poem.
I don't know that game at all. I know the original Luigi and all that, but like
he's in a game franchise. There's 3 of them where he is in a mansion or a hotel in the sequel, and he's got to vacuum up ghosts. And
well, I'm just getting the idea though that a video game character would want everything to be peaceful because they're really sick and tired of having to do all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, especially like the character of Luigi in those games. He just wants like a nice, quiet time, and he never gets it.
He's sick of mushrooms. And...
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I just feel like we get on here, and the nature of the poems we do is like so. There's going to be a fair amount of pop culture in my work. I did try and like sort out some poems
that would not be.
But yeah, no. Oh. So I mean, I'm going to follow Julia with another. Just keep it going. I'm worried that I've read this before.
It's not the end of the world if you have read it.
Great.
Yeah, and I was also going to say, like, you know, I mean, pop culture is fine because, like, the most influential poem for me was this guy, Lawrence Raab, R-A-A-B. He wrote this poem, Attack of the Crab Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
And it told me, like, it's okay to write about this stuff.
Right? Yeah. You can do a kaiju poem.
Yeah, that's basically all I've done for 40 years.
Nice.
So, yes, go with the pop culture.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna do this one, and then I'm gonna, you know, on my next poem, I'll be veering away from that. But this poem is called I'm Waluigi, and I'm here to talk about representational psychology and to bum you out and stuff.
I'm Waluigi, and I'm gonna lose. That's alright, we're in a no-winner scenario now. This is officially into the end times. Nothing is a sacred no more, not a sex, or a death, or even a tennis. After all, what's a love to a Waluigi? A game? A score? Something to be a won or a lost? Not for such as a we, to a man who exists only to represent the negation of the second best of you? It's a meaningless, I tell you. Why, all a life is a meaningless to a Waluigi. Only an endless hall of mirrors, a distorted reflection of all of your hopes, and the dreams twisted in a cast back as a hollow upon you. Now life for you is just a palette swap of a palette swap, and all it reveal is how lazy and uncreative you are. Look at you, doing the same thing over and over again, thinking that it is going to change. That is the definition of a foolish. That is also the definition of being a Waluigi. You having an off day, never feeling that mojo going to work, then you are being a Waluigi, friend. Oh, wah, you are so unoriginal, but you still been a Waluigi. Take it from an expert. One day you show up as a doubles partner for a Wario, perhaps, and the next you are subjected to some semiotic theories, some Marxist readings, maybe a classic argument about whether or not you are a queer representational figure. And look, now you are internet famous. Now everybody wants you, or they want to be you. Now everyone is saying that they are a Waluigi, only to learn that in all of this passion, you are still only an assist trophy in someone else's victory. You are not the bride. You are not even the bridesmaid. You are only the knife cutting into the cake. And the cake is your heart. How does it taste now? Not so special, huh? How do you feel? Never sure if you are even the protagonist in your own adventure or just the next objective in the barista story. That's being a Waluigi, loser. And I did that to you. So you can be not sorry for all that loss.
That's a poem. It's a poem. Okay. It's always hard to follow, Steven.
It's hard to do voices like that.
Yeah, he's the master of those voices. I guess I'm going to keep up with the pop culture themes. I'm going to go niche and do a poem about a podcast I really like. Because why not? This poem is called A Prayer to the McElroy Brothers, and it's after the poet Sabrina Benaim. I've been praying to the McElroys before bed these days, which sounds like the fumble of a laugh, a gasp of cold air, a tooth snagged against my tongue, which is to say a thank you mumbled to the hungry darkness, a holy vow, how January has swum by, oh so dripping slowly this year, and I haven't cried once, have not heaved myself from bed, have not broken, I am always so punctual in my breaking, but this winter I am still whole, and I know there are a multitude of factors, but I keep coming back to these three. How they turn my mouth into a circus flare. How the rain slips off my son of a body. How I have turned warrior cat. I am not fooled. No depression is but a stone's throw away. Has only left to go grocery shopping. It will return. The breaking always returns. Punctual perfection. But these boys, these good, good boys, slit depression's tires, cover the aisles in jelly, pull depression into a bizarre sales pitch. They keep the breaking so far from my home that depression slips from my memory, and what is left is all of me, chipped but still all. And so I pray to Taco. I pray to every dog I long to pet. I pray to a world that is oh so wonderful. I pray to my headphones, bury them in my ears like seeds aching to bloom, and I push play and grin and heal. Boom.
What podcast is
this? So it's a podcast family. Like, they have a bunch of podcasts between them. Their main one is My Brother and Me. They also do The Adventure Zone, Wonderful, Sawbones, Still Buffering, Schmanners, just a bunch. They're all very good, and I highly recommend them, and they bring me a lot of joy.
Julia Gaskill recommends them.
Heck yes.
And Stephen Meads will have a poem in just a second.
Yes.
In a second.
Okay, great. So I'm gonna transition it. This is gonna be a more serious
piece.
Good, because I was going to go more serious in my next one.
You know, and so there's like a slight, you know, content warning on the palm of just like it deals with some of the violence epidemic that is inherent to America. And just give that up front. The title of the poem, which is also the first line, is "I only listen to rap and country, and shit is just not safe anymore." Because in the 90s, all the politicians were all busy slandering rap music as violent and a threat to the youth of America and whatnot, only to live in the time that we are in now, where the news pundits use the Ghetto Boys as relevant political analysis, all while the most dangerous genre in music today is country music. I mean, it speaks for the country, no? All our homegrown American violence blurred right up in the stew pot, how the classics, trucks, heartbreak, and mama standbys have been traded in for drinking and blackout drinking and more drinking, for skirt chasing, possibly casual date raping, and of course, they still go to church on Sundays, talk to Jesus. I mean, after all, gotta send them thoughts and prayers somewhere. I think that country is the most dangerous genre to listen to as well. It is as American as a massacre in a bar, after all. As American as Las Vegas. All boys will be good old boys, after all. Oh God, we keep sending you all these thoughts. Can you help us out already? We keep praying to you, but Sam Will Hunt. You know, we named a whole genre of music after our war machine, and then we act surprised when it opens up fire in our own backyard. And so it is clear, I grew up listening to country music. My dad and my stepmom played it in the house and in the car, took me to rodeos and to concerts, and I am not dead yet from this new American epidemic, or from this country, or from listening to country within this country, or from courting death with my ears, like if it ain't killed me yet. But no matter how I struggle to strive, when I listen to this music, I don't think I will ever get out.
You know what I got out about, though, is that you didn't rebel against what your parents listened to. Is I did.
Yeah.
Well, my mom was fine, or she liked the Doors, which I don't like, but but that's not the issue. That my dad loved the Irish music and classical music, and it took me forever to actually appreciate either of those.
I had a 20-year gap, and I folded everything back in. You know, I was listening to country until I was about 10 or 12, and then I was like, I can't listen to this genre. Everybody thinks it's lame. And so I tried to stop, but it's in your blood.
Yeah, country music's great. It's just, but yeah, it's goes way back, the violence in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shot
a man in Reno just to watch it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. This is a pretty new poem. This poem is called My ADHD Lives at the Auto Shop. There is a song by Maxton Waller in which he sings, "I know that no one knows me better than myself. For 3 decades, I thought this true. My body, a car. My brain, the mechanic who understands its steel, its gear shift, its speed. I learned every inch of myself, comfortable behind the wheel, muscle memory. When my therapist at last spoke the acronym, unraveled an answer revving in my chest, suddenly I felt my driver's license revoked. How dare the world allow me on the road when I never once stopped to pop the hood? I thought the purr in my mind normal. Doesn't everyone's brain handle sharp turns the same? The way my body drifts far too often, my thoughts distracted by the stereo, headlights running through the night, eyes drawn to phone screen when they should be on alert. How there is a constant hiccup when I shift the clutch to respond in conversation. How I go and go and go, all the while forgetting to refill my tank. I have been driving with the hazards on for so long that I simply got used to the blinking. 5 weeks ago, on the way to the airport, Nicole asked if I always drive with both hands glued to the wheel, and damn if that did not make my heart hit the brakes. How my life is nothing if not a gripped steering wheel, knuckles bleached white for fear that if I ease up, I will drive myself into the clouds, the words of my partner, my friends, left in the dust, deserted hitchhikers begging for a ride, but I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, everyone. It's too late. I am already gone in my own world again, and I do not know the route to bring me back to myself." Home.
I'm gonna stick on my theme.
Yeah.
A little bit of transition. I'll say like a couple things about this real quick before I read it. That there was a poetry contest like submission thing that was going on, and I wrote a bunch of poems intending to submit, and then the submission window was like 6 months after the generation window. And I totally forgot, and I never submitted the poems.
You never submitted them? No.
And then this poem, the title of this poem is from a line in a country song by George Jones and Merle Haggard called No Show Jones, in which they are listing the well-known nicknames and monikers of their fellow country luminaries, and they say the line, "Dolly's got two good reasons why she's well-known. Say moxie and charm, likability and intellect. She wrote the song I Will Always Love You and kept the credit. Heart and personality, Porter and Kenny, Tammy and Loretta. Does George Jones have a theme park? Did Merle Haggard run a film career? 9 to 5, art and philanthropy. Dolly out here funding vaccine research to help save lives, and you only have two reasons, her faith and her charity. Because it can't be dumb and blonde. She already told everyone she ain't blonde. It probably isn't pretty and a woman, even though she is a hell of a woman. And maybe they mean cheap and trash. After so many quips she made on her youthful aspirations, Dolly telling interviewer after interviewer about seeing the local town tramp, thinking that's what I want to be when I grow up. There, on the mountaintop of East Tennessee, Dolly is lionizing her home in song, and now all of us who feel like trash have ourselves a hero to look up to. A storyteller born or a storyteller made don't matter. You could find yourself living in a one-room shack, and as long as Miss Dolly has songs to listen to, don't really need any other reasons to go on."
I like that poem.
I do too. I didn't know that George Jones and Merle Haggard did that. They should have known better.
Yeah. Really?
I'm a little more disappointed in Merle Haggard.
It's a different time, but yeah, it's a pretty salty lyric in a song filled with, you know, it's, I don't know.
Sterile.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep following, like, Steven's, I don't know, train of thought with, like, his set, and I'm going to do one about musician. This poem is called "There's a Fucking Psychopath at My Door," which is a literal quote taken from John Darnielle about the song this poem is about. "My ride or die favorite musician, John Darnielle, speaks on the podcast I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats about why, of the literal hundreds of songs he has written in his career, Going to Georgia is the one tune he will no longer perform live at concerts. He is a father now. Does not wish to romanticize guns. The image of a crazed man showing up on his lover's doorstep with a Colt 45 does not fit in this era we live in, nor did it ever really fit. Wrote it back in his darker days. He isn't proud of this song. Does not wish his words to resonate with anyone who might see them as guidelines. He wants better for us. I beam. I nod. I agree with every word he has spoken truth to. And then I listened to Going to Georgia 5 times in a row. And look, I will never be the asshole who screams the song's title at a concert in the hope that John will maybe change his entire stance on toxic masculinity. I would never make such a selfish show of myself. And yet, for the life of me, I cannot quit this melody. I do not know why this song carries such weight. Maybe it is the way John's voice builds on the second chorus. Maybe it is how he sings that it's you, and I always feel it. Maybe because, like every song penned by this man, the lyrics evoke something profound. This is a song that yesteryear me would have deemed romantic. It is not, of course, a man standing in the doorway with a gun, expecting a woman to be kind and forgive him and do the work. But I know the weirdo I once was. I know what being alone did to her mind, the fantasy she crafted, her fucked up definition of what made love tick, what she thought a real relationship looked like. I'm not proud of this. I am glad the child of me who daydreamed of dangerous passion and fatal displays is long dead, but somehow I can still put in the headphones, scream as I cross the Macon County line at the top of my lungs in my car, punching my Subaru's roof on beat, and let her live once more in a fleeting safe second where no one can see her, within the swollen crescendo of a song I know she would have truly loved, and that I am so grateful she will never be able to witness. Whew. I don't know if I've read that one before.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. We probably have like time for one more or so.
We have about 15 minutes.
Okay, we have time for more than I expected.
More than, yes.
Okay. Well, we probably want to jump back to Bigfoot.
But yeah, maybe we want to jump back to Bigfoot. So I'm going to do one more poem, and then, you know, Julia probably
I'll do one
more poem, and then we'll wrap it up. We're talking about Bigfoot. This is a very new poem for me. April is, for a lot of writers and a lot of poets especially, because it's National Poetry Month, there's a thing that a lot of like writing circles and groups do where they try to write 30 poems in 30 days, the 30-30. So this is a poem that I used to kick off my 30-30 this year. So this was written just at the beginning of the month. For 64 weeks, the Honky Tonk Man was the Intercontinental Champion and the most hated wrestler in the entire WWF's mid-card. People were buying tickets in every town, hoping to see Honky get beat, only for him to weasel out some way, still clutching his title. And the rumor mill backstage during this run was that bookers would often pitch Honky on dropping the belt, and for 63 of those weeks, Honky said, "I don't think tonight is the right night for it, brother." And somehow, that convinced the bookers to keep the title on him. And while I know that that's small beans compared to a championship, sometimes I wonder if I am just approaching the bookers in my head, who clearly want me to lose the title, and telling them, "Tonight probably isn't the right night for this, brother." And I have to do that kind of every day in order to keep weaseling through life by hook or by crook. In case it isn't clear, in this metaphor, the championship is just being alive, right? The booking team in my brain is out there trying to strip me of being alive. And here, I am, of course, the bookers, but I am also the talent, looking out for my prolonged interests against myself. The Honky Tonk Man was a mediocre wrestler at best, and yet he has a record-setting title run. 64 weeks with the mid-card title, 454 days where he held on to the belt, and he only lost it to the Ultimate Warrior, which is to say I am a mediocre person at best, but I still am not trying to lose to anything other than the best, the ultimate, and until I face that, well, I just don't think tonight is the night I should be losing, brother.
Poem. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'll wrap up our poem section. I'm also going to read something from my 30-30 that I wrote yesterday. It's pretty short, and it's just mostly like, you know, spring and feeling like I've, you know, COVID is still very much a thing, but kind of like coming back to a return to self.
Those blossoms are out there.
I know, yeah, they're gorgeous. There is a rush of returning to myself after what must have been a millennia's symphony. Spring blooms in my tendons. My fingers recall the steady. The sun kisses my troubled brow. I hear a whispered greeting coming from the cracks of me. Sounds like a muffled mirror. Sounds like a seaside song. Sounds like everything I have been missing since we locked all the doors. I don't know who let her back into the house, but I feel all the tension flee, and I smile through the work as she begins to unlock every single door and let the breeze come dancing back in. Poem. Those are some poems.
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 Definitely good poems.
Yeah.
Definitely
good poems.
And you can hear poems like that, and maybe, and probably a lot more incredible ones.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
Probably. But
this Friday, you may be able to hear them.
You might be able to hear them at Slam Olympics with Pepper.
That's true.
And you will certainly be able to hear them in May. And then, of course, there'll be poems coming from all over the country to Bigfoot on June 1st and 2nd.
June 2nd and 3rd.
June 2nd and 3rd. Edit that.
Yeah, and we had kind of already talked about the festival itself, but just like to recap and sum it up, these two dates, it's going to be on a Friday and a Saturday. You know, we said there's going to be a tournament in the evening. So the first evening, we're going to have competitions happening in both the top level at Powell's and then in the Literary Arts' performance space. There's going to be four different competitions happening between those two spaces that evening, where the top four teams from the night will move on to final stage Saturday night. And that's going to be at the, what is it, the first Congressional United Church of Christ downtown. Super, like, awesome, very, very liberal church.
A big church downtown.
They host a lot of literary events, yeah. And they've been really great to the slam and poetry community here in Portland. But we'll have a final stage there. That's going to be our only ticketed event for the entire weekend of Bigfoot. We haven't, like, talked ticket prices, but they're going to be reasonable. And besides that, we are looking to have an array of day events and side events happening that are entirely free and open to the public. We're going to have a lot of open mics that y'all can come out to read on or listen at, or, you know, participate in whatever way you would like. There's going to be some writing workshops happening on Saturday at Literary Arts. We're going to definitely be having a showcase of some of the incoming poets happening in the lobby at the Ace Hotel, and just a bunch of really cool things, you know, for the poets who are coming here to compete, but also just, like, for the Portland community.
And the public, yeah. If you're interested in poetry, if you have a passing interest, if you love slam, if you've never heard of slam, if you just like spoken art, if you don't like spoken art, there's probably something for you in some space, you know, throughout the weekend. There's going to be mics dealing with, you know, all kinds of subject matter.
We're in the phase right now of kind of planning out what the day programming is going to look like, but I know we certainly are going to have, we're going to have a mic in Primo's Toys and Cantina right across from Powell's, and that one is going to be a nerd slam.
Yeah.
All the pop culture poems.
If you liked what we read, there's going to be that really and more. There will certainly be like a queer mic for queer poets. We'll have some different identity mics for potentially, like, you know, black poets, for people with, like, invisible disabilities, things of that, you know, different identities, essentially.
A lot of these mics we did the previous Bigfoot, and they were very popular, and so we're trying to, like, bring back as many of those as we can. That and they'll awesome. Be
yeah and yeah
I was, so I just got two questions. One is, well, okay, it's probably a dumb question. You named it Bigfoot just because we're in the general area of Sasquatch.
I think, yeah, I don't remember how we came to the name. It was a general consensus, and I think we were just trying to think of, like, okay, so we're in the Pacific Northwest. What do people think of for the Pacific Northwest?
What are our regional icons?
Has anyone done, like, a Sasquatch poetry?
As far as I know, not really. I think the closest is, like, the Vancouver, BC Olympics. Back in, like, 2008 or 2009, had Squatchy as their mascot.
Okay.
Who was a little Sasquatch. And the games opened with a very famous spoken word poet, Shane Coizan, a former slammer.
Oh, yeah.
Who did a poem to grace the opening night, the opening ceremony. So that's the closest combination of, like, Bigfoot to poetry that I think has existed previous. I could be really wrong, but from my memory, you know, we were pitching things like, what are Northwestums, what are Portland...
I know, we, like, couldn't be like, you know, the craft brew.
Yeah, the craft brew.
Regional poetry slam.
Right? That would feel a little weird. Or even, like, you know, like the hazelnut regional felt, you know, like, you don't want to attach yourself
to
one
I'm
food.
I'm half expecting someone to, like, come in and read his poem about Sasquatch and Steve Austin living in the jungle somewhere.
I hope so. Bring it to our nerd slam.
More than welcome.
I'm sure someone will. And the other question I had, stylistically, did you notice, like, I haven't been going to slams at all, so, and I know sometimes there would be some stylistic differences in what people read, like they would do weird voices at least. But is there kind of like there was a guy I knew, Frank D'Andrea, who was on the Portland Slam team, and he actually could do TV static.
Oh, nice.
I mean, that's cool.
And he also had this really great poem that he, I don't know if you got sick of or whatever, but it's about his cat. And it's like really, he has this booming voice and his cat waking him up in the middle of the night. At the same time as the cat's comrades on the other side of the world are waking up, and it's Mao.
That's awesome, very good.
But the thing is that, I mean, and he made it on the Portland Slam team, mm-hmm. but I'm just wondering, is there a lot of diversity in terms of styles?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I think so.
That's the beauty of slam, is it can really be anything. You can just have the poets who just, like, get up and, like, deliver a poem in like just their own voice, and it's well received and beautiful and all of those things. And then, you know, you have like folks that do the voices are highly performative. You know, you get a lot of persona poems from like folks like Steven. I have several persona poems as well.
I also think in a broader sense, I mean, I think that
I'm just curious though.
This is like looking at slam over, so I've been, as was said in my bio, I've been around slam in various forms, 20 years or so, and at least, my first nationals that I attended was in 05. I'd attended a few national events, or localized national events, including a college union's poetry slam, which is CUPSI, in 2003 at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley. So seeing regional styles start out, when I started out, there were distinctive regional voices, for sure. And some of those got blanketed with the rise of the viral videos and the Upworthies and the button poetry videos of the 2012s-ish timeline, where a lot of the distinctive slam voices from different communities, because the internet made it possible for you to see a lot of slam all of a sudden, those sort of cannibalized a larger portion of slam. And I think one of the interesting things about the poetry slam at a national level with its organizers, with PSI collapsing, is the regional voices are coming back. And you're starting to see a lot more stylistic and regional diversity. There's a much more diffuse array of ways that people get poetry now, including but not limited to published books and independent books, of which numerous slam poets have finally conquered the literary space that was so avoiding them for so long.
A number of like slam poets like have actually gone into academia.
Yeah, yeah. There's teachers. There's, I mean, you know, one of my close friends is and former housemate. And Julia as well. Like, we lived with the poet laureate of this state, Anise Moshgani, who started in slam and who I met in 2005 at the National Poetry Slam in Albuquerque, where he was like the most buzzed about poet at that competition. And it's amazing to see, like, he's now, he's on his second term as Oregon State Poet Laureate.
Yeah.
He does readings at libraries across the state. He raises awareness. He's done commercials. He'll read poems out of his window at his studio workspace over on Belmont Street. Something to check out if you ever get a chance.
I'll
usually
try not
reads
to stalk him, though.
Yeah, he usually reads around Sunday, sunset, and he'll announce it.
He, at least you're gonna be on top of that next week.
But I think there is like a real broadening of the regional, like, distinctive poetry again, and I think it's been really rewarding to watch. It's one of my favorite things about returning to live art and getting to be in venue spaces is seeing so many new voices and returning old voices that have kind of like shifted away from maybe a canonized sound into their own distinctive just writing styles and their own distinctive approaches. And I think Portland is representative of that. I think like Portland Poetry Slams back in March, both Slamlandia and the Portland Poetry Slam selected teams that are going to be competing at the Bigfoot Regional and will be showcased in our May fundraiser. And those teams are made up of a bunch of poets with like really unique and amazing voices. Like every single poet is kind of like representing a different aspect of the art in a really like impressive and you know, incredible way. Like, it's seeing a lot of people who have really hit a pinnacle of their craft and are pushing themselves and exploring different ways to both embody poetry on the page and also spoken into the world.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Great question.
Add to that?
No,
we're,
I think
kind of final words.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a great job summing up just like slam in general. I mean, yeah, Stephen's been doing it twice as long as me, so he's got the know-how and the time to it. But yeah, I mean, I think that's basically all the information about the Bigfoot Regional Slam. We would love to have y'all come out for it. Whether, you know, you pop into an open mic here or there, you come out for the entire weekend. It's going to be a really amazing time. We're really
June 2nd
and June 3rd, Friday and Saturday. We are really hoping to make this an annual thing. So, you know, the more people that come out, the more successful it is, the more likely, you know, we're going to have even more people come out year after year. So we would love for you to attend.
And this Friday, April 21st?
April 21st is going to be
Slam Olympics. It's going to be great. Check it out at ADX. They're on 11th near Start.
Benefit in May.
Honey Latte.
Okay.
That's May 20th.
May 20th.
And I'll also just drop BigfootPoetry.com is our website.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Once a Braided River is a documentary film by Barbara Bernstein. The film tells the story of the Willamette River before it was transformed into a Superfund site. The documentary features community groups and activists working to replace the zone and explores their vision to reclaim this stretch of river as a place where people and wildlife can thrive. Again, that's Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for